to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and today I have a super special treat for you guys. My guest today is the husband of one of my very best friends in the whole wide world, the dad of some of my very favorite kids besides my own. He's our neighbor and friend and one of the kindest men I know. Over the past 10 years, he's built a following of over 1 million entrepreneurs, sold hundreds of thousands of copies of his books, popularized the concept of sales funnels, and co-founded a software company called ClickFunnels that helps tens of thousands of entrepreneurs quickly get their message out to the marketplace. Please help me welcome my guest today, Russell Brunson. Hi, Russell.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us today. So my first question for you is about your wife. Because I'm
coolest person I know.
Yes, because I'm dying to know how a goofy wrestler got a catch like Colette to marry him. Like, what did you have to do to convince her?
That was actually, it's funny because I'm famous for like selling stuff, and that was probably the hardest sell I ever had was convincing her to marry me.
I bet. That's awesome.
It's funny because when we first met, she's 5.5 years older than me, and a bunch of my roommates kind of had crushes on her, so we always go as an apartment, go hang out over there because they were all trying to date her and stuff like that, and I didn't think that was even a possibility, so I just come hanging out because I had nothing else to do. And after a little while, we just kind of started liking each other, and then that was a big question. I was like, could I date someone like 5.5 years older than me? And I'm like, would she actually like someone 5.5 years younger than her? Like, that was the other side of the question. And then luckily she said yes to the first date, and then it all worked out at the end.
Okay, so most people who know you as a fantastically successful businessman, a marketer, a public speaker, an author, a guy who can do everything. And I've been super excited to interview and strategically place your interview after my episode on failure because I know that you haven't always been this successful. I know that you've had to overcome some things and even fail at a few other business endeavors before you got to where you are. So I was hoping you would start by telling us that story.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of stories about my failures. how many do you want?
As many as you have time.
As many as you share. No, it's funny because when I first started my business, so I was in college and had just met Colette, and we were about to get married. And first time I remember, I told my dad, I was like, "Hey, I'm getting married," and he was like, "Well, how are you gonna support yourself?" And I was like, "Well, you've been supporting me," and he's like, "Well, when you get married, I don't do that anymore." And I'm like, "Oh, I didn't even like, think through that." Like, "Oh," he's like, "when you get married, you're a grown man and you're on your own." And I was like, "Okay, I gotta figure out." So, that's what started this whole process. I started like learning about how to internet marketing and how to sell things, and tried a whole bunch of, I spent probably about almost two years trying stuff that didn't work. So there's a whole slew of failures in there. But some of the bigger ones were after I started kind of figuring out like, oh, this is how internet marketing works. You create a product, you set up a website, you get people to come to it, and just kind of learn the basics. I started making some money, and really quick I started hiring some people because it started getting overwhelming. So I hired some of my friends. And it's funny because anybody who like would ask me a question about it, I'd hire him because I was like, oh, you care about this? Let me hire you. I need someone to hang out with that would talk to me because no one else knew what I was doing or cared about it, you know? And so I ended up hiring a bunch of my friends and we started growing the company. And there's this really weird thing. As entrepreneurs, you make money like when you sell something and that's it. But as employees, you get paid every 2 weeks whether you make money or not. And so I started growing this business and they'd want a paycheck. Like, hey, it's payday. And I'm like, we don't have any money. They're like, well, we have to get paid. So I'd be like, oh, so I go and try to put together something really quick to sell. And that pay payroll. And then like they're out of money again. And then I knew payday was like in 2 weeks again. So I literally ignore all my staff because I didn't have time to train them on stuff. I had to go make money so I could pay for them. And so they were sitting on the other side of the office, like just wondering like what they should do while I was hiding away trying to make money to pay for them. And it was like this horrible thing. And that was the first time it was like Christmas time and everything was, basically I ran out of money, ran out of ideas. And I was like, I have to like fire all my friends and a bunch of my family members. And which was just a scary thing. It's funny. I was out like hanging Christmas lights up, listening to an MP3 of like somebody telling some business ideas, and someone had an idea. And I was like, I could try that. So I called them up. I'm like, hey guys, you don't know this yet, but we're completely broke. I have no money for payroll or Christmas. But I think I got an idea, like, do you guys want to come try this thing out? And they were kind of confused, and then they all jumped in, and we got together, and we put together a new plan. And it's funny now, we'll probably talk about funnels a little bit, but it was a funnel we put together. We didn't call them that back in the day. We created this thing, and we launched it, and we made enough money to cover everyone for Christmas, and it also built, like, a continuity business so we could actually have money coming in. So that was the first time we kind of almost collapsed the business. But after that, I kind of figured out, like, oh, this is how it was working again. So we started growing really big and grew to the point we had about 100 and something employees. And then one day, overnight, like that whole business, we lost all of our merchant accounts, everything shut down. Even the economy was changing, and I had to lay off about 80 people in one day. A lot of them are friends and family members. All of them are friends, some family members as well. And then over the next like 3.5, 4 years of my life, it was just like laying off more people and trying to like keep the doors open and just almost going through bankruptcy twice, almost getting sued by people we owed money to, and trying to figure out how to pay them. It was just, it was a really, really dark, painful 2.5, 3 years or so. We owed a bunch of money to the IRS, and finally we were able to work out of it. But those are the two, and when I think back about the whole thing, those are the two biggest times that my business kind of crashed. And it's funny, after the second big crash, when I had to lay off all those people, I had a chance to meet this guy who'd made hundreds of millions of dollars, like super wealthy. And he asked me to tell him my story. So I told him like the highlight reel that most people hear about. And he's like, well, have you ever failed? And I was like, ugh. So I reluctantly told him those stories about the failures. And he was like, okay, good, you cycled. And I was like, what does that mean? He's like, you cycled. And I'm like, okay, like, what does that mean? He said, I'll never work with an entrepreneur who hasn't cycled at least once. He says, if they're always successful, he said that they still believe their own bio, they still drink their own Kool-Aid. He said, after you've built something and you've lost it all, then you've cycled. He said, then you're humble enough to actually be able to work with you to actually create something really, really cool. So he said, because you cycled twice, I could actually work with you. And I remember thinking, like, that sounds so much better than failure. But it's so true now. Like, a lot of times when I work with people, you see the first time they have success. Like, they're going crazy and they're doing a bunch of stuff. It's always like, they make a lot of decisions. A lot of times super, not arrogant, but, like, they think it's them. And you realize when you do have big failures, it's like, oh, it's not you. There's a lot of other people involved, and there's timing, there's inspiration from God, and there's people, and there's so many things that happen, and it's like, as soon as you forget about that, it feels like the Lord humbles you. And so ever since the second crash, I've tried to be super aware of that constantly, and I'm not perfect, but very aware of like, okay, who are all the people that are in charge of this? What are the inspiration from God that's coming, that's guiding me on these things, and trying to be very aware of those, because I'm just scared that if I'm not aware, it's going to happen again. So anyway.
So what would be your big takeaway? Would you say that it's, instead of calling it failure, maybe we're cycling, or...
I think so, and I think people become okay with that. Like, one of the biggest problems with the entrepreneurs I work with is they're so scared of the potential of crashing that they won't risk things or try things. Oh, yeah. And I always tell them, I'm like, if you look at the founding fathers, like, they gave us this blessing. I think it's a gift from God, the bankruptcy laws. I'm like, worst case scenario, if you go bankrupt, like, it's not the end of the world, right? Like, it's a gift that we can reset and start over. And that's what gives entrepreneurs and people the ability to risk and try things, knowing that, like, worst case scenario, there's a reset you can start over. And so I always tell people that, like, it's okay to know, or I think it's okay to fail and to be prepared for it. And just when I first started this journey, I was listening to Brian Tracy. He was doing an interview I was listening to, and he said that one night he was watching TV and there was this panel of like millionaires, and there's like 17 millionaires on this panel, and they were interviewing all of them. And one of the things the host asked was like, well, how many times did you guys each fail before you were successful? And they didn't know the answer, so they cut the commercial while they counted, and they came back and they said, like, I think of the people up there, the average, they'd all failed like on average 14 times before they had their success. Wow. And then Brian Tracy said, do you think it's that they just got, you know, they failed and eventually they got lucky and they did it? Or do you think it's they failed and they figured out like that didn't work, and then they failed and they got better and they got better until eventually it's like they couldn't not be successful? And I think it's the other way, like the failures are okay because it's like protecting you from that thing again, and it gets you closer and closer to where you're at. Like, I know that if I would have launched our company ClickFunnels 10 years ago, I would have bankrupted it 4 or 5 times by now, right? But all these things I learned going on this journey now, it's like I'm hyper aware of like, okay, there's a gap here. There's a way I can fail here. There's things that are happening, and I'm able to protect myself because of that, because of the failures. I feel like the failures are preparing you for whatever your bigger mission is someday.
The pitfalls. I love that. I love that so much. So my question is for you personally, like, after that second crash where you were so close to the bottom, why not just get a regular job somewhere working for someone? Like, what gave you the idea and the courage to start from just to do it over again?
I actually vividly remember laying in bed one day thinking, I wish that I had a boss so he could fire me, because it was like, I would have loved to like step away from that. For me, the circumstances of the whole crash, I wasn't able to. I had a bookkeeper who hadn't paid payroll taxes in over a year. Oh, and then we had sold a whole bunch of coaching, so we had a bunch of students who had bought stuff that we had outstanding liabilities to. And so I woke up every morning for a 2-year period of time knowing that if I don't pay the IRS back, and payroll, I didn't know this at the time, like, payroll taxes is not like they give you a fine, like, payroll taxes, they lock you up and you go to jail. So I was like, if I don't figure out how to pay the IRS up, I go to jail, which is like really scary thing to think through, right? And the second thing is like, I had sold stuff to people and I had to keep fulfilling on it. And if I didn't fulfill on it, it would have destroyed my name and my reputation. I would have lost that forever too, which is like, So either I go to jail or I lose my reputation or both. And I was like, I can't quit, even if I wanted to. So for me, those are the two things that were really the driving forces that kept me in it. But then it's like, I don't know.
But you could have just quit. I mean, you could have just said, take me to jail. I don't care about my reputation. I'm going to get a 9-to-5-er. Like, this is too much stress.
Yeah, I guess you could have. But I don't know. There's something. I grew up as a wrestler, and I just know that, like, all the good stuff in wrestling came on the back of, like, defeat. Like, my junior year in high school, I thought I was going to be a state champ. My very first match, I lost it. But, like, that loss, the person I lost to, like, my dad filmed that match, and we went and watched it 1,000 times over. And then in the state finals, I actually wrestled the same guy, and ended up beating in the finals. And then I looked at, like, all my big successes, like, being an All-American, all those things, they all came on the back of, like, a bunch of failures. It was like, okay, here's the mistakes, here's the problems, let's focus on that. Like, what are the tweaks and the changes we got to make to come back and do better next time? And so for me, it was more like that, like, as painful as it was and how much I just wanted to give up, it was more like, okay, we saw it work before. Like, I'd seen it before, right? I'd seen, you know, a company with 100 people generates a lot of revenue and helps a lot of people. So I was able to see the fruits of it. And, like, I love that part of it. And I think part of me, like, missed that part. I was like, okay, we just gotta figure out how to get back to there. We were there once, we just gotta figure out the model and how to change it and tweak it. And luckily for us, eventually we figured it out again.
Yeah. So do you credit wrestling with that resilience that just kept you in there and in the game and going and working hard?
100%, yeah. I think most athletes that I know do really good in other things in life. Business, not all of them, some of them are dumb. I have a lot of friends who are like, train wrecks. But for me, 100%, like, it, wrestling and sports together is teaches you so much stuff, right? Because yeah. Most people in their life, they don't do sports, like, they don't ever fail. Like, they are in a thing where they're studying, they're learning, they take a test, they get a, you know, they get their grade, and they just, those kind of things, but they don't have a chance to fail. Where most sports, especially wrestling for me, is because, you know, typical wrestling season, you have 30 to 40 matches, and off season, you got another 80, so you're looking 100 matches a year. So most people don't win 100 matches a year. Like, you lose tons of those, right? And so for me, it was that way. I lost so many times. And I think losing is such a good thing, because you learn, either you give up and you walk away and you can throw your hands in, or you're like, okay, I got to beat that. For me, it's like, because especially when wrestling is like, you see the person, you know who they are, and you're like, you know, next week they're going to be the same tournament again. Like, I got to beat this guy next week. And it makes you so frustrated. So you're like, watch the match, figure out what they're doing, and then practice all week and see them again. You try again, and then they beat you again. You're like, and you come back, and you keep doing it until, you know, to the end. So it helps a lot.
I totally agree. I'm starting to understand your drive here. So I talk a lot on my blog and my podcast about finding your life's purpose. So what do you think is your life's purpose, and does it include making a whole bunch of millionaires?
I love making millionaires. That is fun.
You're good at it.
Yeah, in our office now, we have a, I don't know if you've seen our two comma club awards, right? Mm-hmm. So we have, like, this hallway, it was the bathroom hallway, and everyone that makes $1 million inside ClickFunnels gets a big plaque. And now both sides of the hallway, floor to ceiling, are filled. Now the kitchen is completely filled too. And we've got maybe, I don't know, maybe 30 to 40 days before, like, we have no more room in our office to hang up these plaques for everyone. So, no, but for me, to be honest, I didn't know for a long time what my mission was at all. Like, I was excited by this, like, business and sales and marketing got me excited, but I always felt kind of shallow, like, what's the point of all this? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was learning it, and I was excited as I kept doing it. And honestly, it wasn't probably until about a year ago that I think I really started getting clarity on what my vision was. And I had a really good coach, named Tara Williams, I was working with at the time. And she just asked me, she said, do you see the parallels of, like, what you're doing? And I was like, no, I'm just trying to make money. And she's like, do you need more money? I'm like, no. She's like, then why do you keep doing this? I was like, because, and I start telling, like, stories about people. I'm like, okay, like, I'll write off a couple quick stories that are fun. Like, one is, there's a girl named Annie Grace that works with us who, she beat alcohol addiction. She couldn't do it through 12-step programs. She figured out her own way to do it. She'd written books about it. And a year ago, she came to our program, and she's like, I want to help change the world, and she didn't know how to do it. And I was like, well, I don't know how to help people with alcohol addiction, but I know how to get your message out to a bunch of people. So we gave her some tools and some training, and she's helped, in the last 12 months, over 50,000 women, or not women, people, to overcome alcohol addiction. There's a guy named ChrisBeatsCancer.com who got the death sentence at, like, 27, 28-year-old, that he had cancer, and decided not to do chemotherapy and thought, you know, can I cure myself? I don't know. So he started going, trying to cure himself, and eventually cures himself naturally, and decided, I need to get this message out to people. And so we've been able to help give him tools and systems to get that out. And he's helped tens of thousands of people naturally cure themselves of cancer. Pamela Weibel helps doctors commit suicide. She said thousands of doctors from suicide through our tools and our training. And, like, I just look at all these people who have gifts that I don't have. Like, I can't help a doctor not commit suicide, or I can't help someone lose weight. I don't know those things, but I have, because of, like, what I've done, I've learned how to, like, get someone, whatever their business, their product, their service out, to get it to more people. And so for me, like, I really feel like that's my mission now. It's like, how do I empower entrepreneurs to actually change the world? And so ever since I kind of got that, like, I've become, like, hyper obsessed with entrepreneurs. And how can I help them? How can I give them the tools, the inspiration, like, whatever it is? Because I'm a huge believer that entrepreneurs are the only people that can actually change the world. Like, I don't think politicians are going to do it. I don't think government's going to do it. Like, I see entrepreneurs who are, like, obsessively compassionate about, like, their thing they figured out, like, that's who changes the world. And so for me, it's just like, if I can empower each of them, then that's my mission, to help them be able to change their world. So that's kind of my thoughts.
I think that's awesome. I love it so much. And I love watching you work. So I've seen you speak at some live events, and I know you get up there and you command a room with thousands of people in it. But I also know you personally and socially. I know you as really shy and reserved. I know you'd rather...
Not awkward,
but shy. But I know you'd rather hang out in the corner and observe than be out, like, working the room, which is what people would think if they see you at these live events. So which of these personalities comes more naturally to you? Like, what's the real Russell?
I'm 100% awkward, weird kid. No, it's funny because, 2 months ago, I spoke at an event that had 9,000 people in the room. And I was on stage, and I just, like, loved every second of it. It was so much fun. And then afterwards, I was in the hallway, and someone came to talk, ask me a question. And one of the guys that works with me, Dave Woodward, he told me, he's like, if you see your body language, like, you're on stage, and your body's just, like, excited. Yeah. And someone comes up to you, and you're just, like, scared to death. And I think for sure that's definitely, like, more naturally who I am. Like, my whole life I was awkward, nervous growing up. I didn't have a ton of friends. The one thing I had growing up was wrestling. Like, that was my thing. So I was friends with wrestlers, but, like, spending my 20-year high school reunions this year, and, like, they're looking at the list of everyone's coming, and I didn't know anyone who was coming. Like, none of the wrestlers show up, and I know anybody. I'm like, how do I not know anybody? I didn't know anybody. I wasn't friends with anyone. I went on a mission for our church, and I was awkward, nervous there. In fact, I reconnected with my mission president recently. He told me, he came to our last event, and he was like, I had never in a million years would have pegged you to be the one who'd be on stage doing that. I'm like, oh. But it was funny because I remember consciously when I made that decision to try to figure that out. I had been selling things online behind the computer, and I was comfortable there, and I liked it. And I went to my very first internet marketing seminar. It was Atlanta, Georgia. It was this guy named Armin Morn who put it on. And I remember I wanted to go because I didn't know anybody else who was doing what I was doing, and I felt lonely. And entrepreneurship, I think, a lot of times is lonely because you share ideas with people, and they usually look at you like, oh, wow, good luck with that. You know what I mean? Their eyes glaze over. And so I didn't have anyone to talk to about this whole thing. And so I knew that there was this event, and all these entrepreneurs were going to come. So I was like, I'm going to come and just, like, be with my people. I was so excited. So I went there. And I remember, I didn't know how events were ran back then. And back then, the way that they were, a lot of times people call them pitch fests, where, like, every speaker comes and they sell something. And I didn't know that's what it was. But I come to this event, the first speaker gets on stage, and he talks for, like, 90 minutes. Then he sells something. And I was so confused. Like, I was like, what? Is he selling us something? I just didn't understand what was happening. But I saw he was selling a $2,000 thing, and all these people were jumping up, running to the back of the room. I remember looking back, doing the math, and I was like, 2,000, 4, 6, 8, 10. I'm like, that guy made, like, $80,000 in an hour. And then the next speaker gets up, and he was selling a $5,000 package, and he sold it, and people run back. I was doing the math, and he did, like, $150,000. And I watched this for 3 days, speaker after speaker. And by the end, I was like, I have to learn how to do that. Like, if someone can stand on a stage and in an hour make more money than I made in an entire year, or some people in an entire lifetime, like, I have to learn that art and how that works. And it's funny because it didn't come naturally. Like, someone invited me to speak in the seminar, so I went the first time, and it's so embarrassing. I had a shaved head back then and glasses, and I always wear a suit and tie because I thought that's how, you know, you have to be a business person. And I went and I stood up on stage, and I was super nervous and awkward. I tried to sell something, and nobody bought it, and I was like, I will never do this again. And I didn't for a long time, but then I kept seeing this happen. I go to other events and I see stuff, and I was like, this is a skill set I have to learn. And so I ended up spending the next almost 10 years of my life, like, doing that. About 2.5-3 years I was flying around the country speaking at events, trying to learn the art of it, trying to get comfortable with doing it. So scary. And then about 2.5 years in, this is after we had the twins were born, and I remember I was at the Boise airport one night, like, at 11:30 at night. I was the only one in the airport, and I was just miserable. I'm like, I'm flying somewhere else to go speak. I just wanted to be home. And I remember texting Colette, and I was like, hey, I'm retiring. I'm going to be done with this. And she's like, you can't. That's how we make our money. I'm like, I know, but I'll figure out some other way. But I'm done. So I basically quit speaking. And then I went and, like, how do I replicate this on the internet? And so we started doing teleseminars back then, and then webinars. And that became how we kind of did stuff. But I went out of my comfort zone to learn it and became comfortable with it. Now, you know, I teach thousands of entrepreneurs how to do that, how to either do it on a webinar or on a teleseminar or on stage. And because I think that having your own platform is the best way to get your message out there and be able to actually change people's lives. It's hard to do it if you're going to be the awkward, introverted person. So for me, I had to come out of that to be able to actually have the impact I really wanted. But it's still, yeah, I mean, you go to church, you know how I'm, like, this shy guy on the side. That in my last ward, the last church, nobody knew what I did. No one ever asked. It was kind of nice, and so I was fine. And this ward, like, someone found out. They told people, and now people ask me questions.
So, like, I'm dying to know, because it doesn't come naturally to you. I know that because I know you. But is there something that you, like, do you have to, like, mentally prepare somehow? Do you say something to yourself? Or, like, how do you just prep yourself to go so far out of your comfort zone? I mean, do you like play the Rocky soundtrack in your mind? Like, what do you do?
It's funny because I still get super nervous every time, and people always say, how do you get nervous? Like, you do this all the time. I'm like, I don't know, but in the same way wrestling, even when I was wrestling someone who wasn't good, I would still get insane butterflies and nervousness and like all that stuff. But as soon as I would step on the mat and shake their hand, as soon as you shook the hand, like instantly would disappear and you're like in the zone. And for me, it's the same way. Like, I get so nervous. I think the biggest thing I found is, it's funny, one of my employees caught me the other day. You know, I do this, but I always, before I go find somewhere to go pray, and basically I just pray that like I will be able to have the thoughts in my head to be able to actually inspire people to do what they need to do. And that's like the biggest comforting thing for me is just praying. Understanding that it's not me. Like, I think a lot of times we get nervous because it's like, this is us, and it's like we're putting us on trial. Of, are they going to like me? They're not going to like me. That freaks us out. And I think over the last few years I've come to the realization that like my job is not to care if people like me. It's like, can I actually have the impact and change this person? And so that's become more important to me. So I always pray for that, and that helps calm my nerves. But then it's still scary. I get out there and it's like, even the smaller ones where it's like smaller, I get so nervous and anxiety. And as soon as they introduce me, I come out, I see everybody, and it's like, it goes away. Cause I'm like, these are people I can serve, I can help. And it's just so much fun.
That's so cool. So I'm sure several of my listeners would love to do something amazing. Like I try to talk a lot about finding your life's purpose. And I know that so many of my listeners out there are like, I want to do it. Like they've found their purpose, but they're so afraid that it will require doing something uncomfortable or really far out of their comfort zone. So what advice do you have for them to just kind of put that aside and be like, this is my mission. This is what I have to do, even if I'm deathly afraid.
The good news is we're all afraid, and you're not going to be afraid at first. So this is my big thing, I believe. So I think for everybody, when you're trying to find your life mission, your purpose, whatever it is, right? A lot of times, like, even if we haven't achieved it yet, we know, like, this is where I'm going, right? And we have, like, this goal. I always picture, like, there's a mountain. And on top of the mountain, there's this result we want to get. Like, that's where I'm going. So I'm going this direction to try to go up there, right? But most of us aren't there yet. And the biggest fear I see with people who are trying to, like, actually change the world is they're always like, okay, well, when I get there, then I'll be able to do stuff. And it's like, the problem is you never get there. Like, it's like the horizon line, right? The closer you get to the horizon, the further it's away. You never actually get to the end. And so I think the biggest thing is just starting, like starting. And that's the scary thing, because we're not ready to start. So one of my friends, Gary Vaynerchuk, he said something that was really profound one time. He said a lot of people will go out there trying to, like, create content to do whatever they're trying to do. He's like, no, don't create content. Like, he said, figure out where you're going and then document the journey. And I was like, oh my gosh, it blew my mind for a couple reasons. So one of them is, after my whole business collapsed and crashed, and I was like, the worst possible time to start telling my story was when I started my podcast. And I remember I was like, part of me was like, why am I doing this? Like, I'm a failure in business. Why am I starting a business podcast, right? Like, I'm the worst person. But I was like, I'm going to start it now because I think even though I failed, like, I know some things other people haven't. So maybe I can start sharing some stuff that someone's going to start helping with. So I created a podcast similar to what I told you to do, which you're doing, which is so cool.
I was totally going to point that out. You sat on my couch and you said, just do it. And just I'm like, but I don't know what to talk about. And you're like, it doesn't matter. Just start talking. You'll find your voice. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And we're on episode 16.
It's so amazing. You're doing it. It's crazy because for me, so I knew that I wouldn't, like, I didn't have a microphone or anything when I got started, so I just grabbed my phone and I just recorded while I was driving. So my first podcast was called Marketing Your Car, and it was literally me driving to the office. Because we'd gone from a 20,000-square-foot office to this 2,000-square-foot one at a 4-minute commute. So I was like, 4 minutes a day, I'm just going to talk about what I'm praying will work today because everything has been working. And so I would do that every single day. I'd do it probably 3 times a week, and I would publish it. And luckily, I didn't know at the time how to check podcast stats. Well, I had no idea if anyone was listening, and I found out later nobody was for a long time, for a couple years. I was doing it 3 times a week. It's been about 5 years now since I first launched the podcast. And now we get tons of downloads. But for a long time, we didn't get any. And but it was me documenting this journey. What's cool about now is, like, now people find out about me. Like, oh, Russell built this huge company called ClickFunnels. And they hear, like, the big result we've done. But what's crazy is that people don't connect with me. Like, oh, Russell's built this huge company. Like, it's almost hard to connect with people when you actually have gotten the result. So I tell people, like, well, go start my podcast. Go start episode number one. This is like, we almost went through bankruptcy, we didn't. And then I documented the last 5.5 years how we got here. So start listening there, and you'll hear everything I learned along the way, and the frustrations, and the whole journey. You guys can come on this thing with me. And what people tell me is they log in and they start the first one. They say, yeah, I went and I binged, listened to like 5 years of your life. And it's funny because they'll come and they'll tell me these stories. I'm like, oh, I forgot about that like 5 years ago. But they binge listen to everything. And also now they're connected to me. And now they care about the result because they've heard about the downs. Yeah. So now they care about the ups. When people only hear about the ups, they don't care about you, what you're doing. So I think for everyone, I would say, if you're listening right now, like, you need to start documenting your journey. And there's different ways to do it. I always ask people, like, whoever's listening, like, how many of you guys who are listening consider yourself a writer, like you like to write stuff, okay? If you're a writer, you should start a blog, and like you should like be blogging 2 or 3 times a week, just telling your journey, you moving towards some result you're trying to get. If you like talking, then you should do a podcast and just do like this, like interviewing people or telling your own story or both, and document your journey that way. Or the third, if you like video, which is my platform I'm most comfortable with nowadays, is like turn on a video camera and videotape yourself or do a Facebook Live or Instagram or just talk. And you, like, by you documenting the journey of you trying to get the result, that's how you find your voice. That's how you start, people will start coming to you when you start putting it out there. Because at first they don't, and at first it's small, but if you keep doing it, eventually you get better and better. In fact, I had one of my buddies who went and binge listened to the whole podcast. He was like, yeah, your first like 43, 44 episodes were really bad. He's like, but about 45-ish, you started like, it started like clicking, and he's like, now it's like, you're awesome. He's like, I found you, you found your voice, you figured out your stories, but it took me 45 episodes to get there, right? Like, what if I would have stopped after 16 or 20, like, yeah. I never would have got here, and all the people who are able to impact now never would have heard the message. So for all you guys, it's just like, do it, even though no one's, in fact, I think a lot of times we get nervous because like, oh, no one's even gonna hear it. But that should be comforting, because at first you're gonna probably not be very good. So like, that's okay, like do it now, and when no one's listening, as you're learning it, it's not about them reading or hearing your thing at first, it's about you finding your voice. And after you found your voice, the people will come, they always do.
Yeah, that's funny, because I listen to all the courses by like John Lee Dumas, all the ones you tell me to listen to. And they all say you have like 15 to 20 episodes where they'll kind of give you the leeway. And I'm like, oh, I'm getting so close to that little threshold. I'm like, I hope I have it figured out. Like, at least I'm pressing record now. Yeah. Like, I'm definitely getting better every
You're
time.
Learning how it works. That's awesome.
So in all of your travels, who's the coolest or most influential person you've ever met?
I definitely have to say, for both coolest and influential, would be Tony Robbins. Tony's just like, I mean, Tony's, he's not a member of our church, he's not, but I felt the spirit more with Tony than probably anybody else, which from a spiritual side is amazing. But I also look at him, and he's someone who works with people from all around the world. Like, you see him working with the Dalai Lama all the way down to like people who are suicidal. Like, you see this contrast, and he's someone who, when you see him in public, it's hard to know, because, you know, on stage, and he's like, there's no one better stage presence than Tony in the world. Like, he's just amazing. Then you see him like the intimate spots where he wouldn't have, he could be super incongruent because like nobody else is around, and he's still like this super congruent person who like is just obsessed with helping other people. And to see someone who's done that at such a high scale and helps so many people. I mean, we were at one of his events, and it's a big event he does twice a year, and he asked everyone in the audience, like, who here is suicidal? And there's probably 40, 50 people raise their hands. And he sat there for like, I don't know, 20-something hours, going person by person, like, fixing them, reprogramming their brain, and you watch it over and over and over again. That's suicide. And the next day is, like, relationships and thing. It's just, like it's amazing to see someone like that who cares so much and has built such a big platform that they can actually have. Because there's amazing people everywhere, but someone who's built a platform that can do it that wide of a scale and still be, like, a good human being is rare. And so, yeah, he's amazing.
That's so cool. And who of all of the entrepreneurs that you've ever worked with, who's been your favorite or most memorable?
Oh, man.
That's probably a tough question. I was like, there's who's your favorite kid?
I know. I'm obsessed with entrepreneurs. They're so amazing. I would say probably the one that would be top of mind right now is just because I've seen them. They've made a lot of money, like insane amounts of money, but like for them, it's not about money. Like, they're so big on impact. So it's a young couple, Brandon and Kaylin Poland, and they, I think they're 24, 25 years old right now. And 3 years ago, they came to our world. They'd been in like a network marketing opportunity that kind of collapsed on them. And so they came in like completely broke. And I remember they sent me a video, like the very first day they found out about us. And it was like, hey, Russell, like, we're Brandon and Kaylin, and we're going to be your biggest success story ever. And I get those sometimes. I was like, oh, good luck, you know, and that's all I heard. And then it's funny, now that I know them, I heard the story afterwards. They're like completely broke, had no money, newlywed couple, right? And so they went, and we were selling this course. It was $1,000, which I think their bank account at the time was like, there was no money. They all had his credit lines. That's all they had. And they went and they watched this webinar I did. And Kaylin was like, you got to buy this. And Brandon was like, oh, I don't dare to. So he was supposed to go buy it. And he wimped out and instead just bought like this, like a lower thing we sold for like $100. And she found out, she got so mad. She went in, she went and bought it. And so it ended up costing them $1,100 of $100. But they were like, we have to make this work. Like, our entire life depends on this. And so they went and opened up the course. They pushed play and they watched it. And they paused it. And whatever I said, they said, okay, we're just going to do this. Exactly like Russell said. She actually coined the hashtag do what Russell says on all our events. Everyone's like, hashtag do what Russell says. But she's like, everything he says, we're just going to do it perfectly. And I've never met somebody that just executed better than them. They watched it, paused, do it, come back, do it. And they went to do the entire course that way. And on the back, they launched this company called Lady Boss Weight Loss, which, you know, I'm sure some of your listeners probably heard of. It's blown up into, they've helped over 100,000 women in the last 3 years to successfully lose weight. They built a culture. They built a brand. They're launching supplements now. At our last event, they got a big award for making over $10 million in the funnel. But the most amazing thing is just, like, the impact. Like, I see, because I'm like, the only man in their because it's a weight loss program for women, so I'm like the only man in their groups, like just kind of watching, act, you know, because I want the people to know, but I'm watching what's happening. I'm looking at these transformations and how many people's lives they're affecting and they're changing. It's just, oh, like, it just, nothing gets me more excited than seeing what an entrepreneur can do.
Right after this. Like, I actually heard you speak about them, and I'm like going to look them up right after.
They are amazing.
So for those of us who are just at the beginning of our entrepreneurial journey, what is the most important piece of advice you would offer us? Like, what's the most, one thing?
I think the most important thing, the thing that most entrepreneurs do that's wrong is they get obsessed with like a product. Like, oh, I created this product, I found this thing. Or like they get obsessed with the product. And when you get obsessed with the product, it's hard to have success and it's hard to have impact. What I recommend ever do is you get obsessed with the person. Like, a business is not about selling a product. A business is about giving somebody a result. So I always think about like, hey, in fact, if you read the .com, my first book I wrote, I talk about how like after we went bankrupt and we were trying to rebuild our business, like I had this chance to like figure out like who was my dream customer. Like if I could pick one person to serve, or it's like if I could hang out with them every day and just like help them become better, who would that be? And I spent a lot of time, like insane amounts of time thinking about that question, like who is, and in fact, I went to Google and I typed in like, I want six people who are successful, people who used to be athletes, people who, I made a whole list of stuff, and I went to Google Images. I typed all those things in, and then I typed in man, and I found, it shows all these faces of people, and there was this guy, and I don't know who, I have no idea who he actually is, but I saw his face, and I was like, that's my dream customer. So I took that Google image, and I printed it out, and I framed it on my desk, like, this is the man I want to serve. And I went, and I typed in a woman's name, and I typed in, I think it was Julie, and she's successful, and she's got a couple kids, and I kind of explained, like, my dream person. And I went to Google Images and I typed all that in and I saw this person. I was like, that's Julie. I don't know who her real name is in real life, but that's Julie. I printed her out and I had her on the desk and I would just look at him every day. I was like, okay, like that's what I want to serve. I want to serve Mike and Julie. And then I started thinking like, okay, like this is Mike and Julie. And because I wrote like this list of who they were and everything, I was like what do they actually care about? What do they want? And that's the question I started asking myself. And I was like, okay, now what can I create? How can I actually serve them? Like, what would I, if I really care about their success, like, what would I do? And what would I create? What would it look like? And how, and it shifted my mind from like creating products to like, how do I serve those guys? And then from that, then the product idea just started coming out and they just started, and it's crazy. The very first thing, very first product we created afterwards, like it attracted the Mikes and the Julies. Like it was like perfect bait that got those people in because we crafted to try to serve them, right? And what's crazy is we did that, we ran that product for a while, and then at the back end of it, we did an event. We had about 100 or so people came to Boise for that event. And what's crazy was like 30% women, 70% men. And I told them initially, I said, hey, you guys, I'm going to tell you something cool I learned. Like, I wanted to get the right people in. I said, how many of you guys, for the men in the room, how many do these characteristics tell you? Like, you used to be an athlete, you've had success in the past, you want to impact more, and I listed through the things, 100% hands went up, and I showed a picture of Mike. I was like, you guys are all Mikes, and I said, how many of you guys, how many of the women here are this, and I did every one of the women, like, and afterwards, all the women came to me, like, I'm your Julie, and I was like, I know, because we crafted it from that point forward. And so if I think for every entrepreneur, it's becoming hyper-focused on, like, customer, the customer avatar, whatever you want to call it, you're like, you want to become obsessed with it, like, you could wake up every morning, and just know, like, if I'm serving that person, like, it's going to be the best time in the world, and that's, like, that's where you start. And then the products, everything else will come after that. It's just figuring out the person that you're so, that you would just go crazy to be able to serve. And then starting there, and then everything amazing will grow on the back of that.
Okay, I have my avatar list, so I'm working on it.
Cool.
So I'm working on it. All right, I'm going to get a little personal with you. You have 5 amazing kids, and you're an incredible dad. In fact, my very favorite thing is I drive your daughter in carpool, and so I love when I drop her off, and sometimes it's late at night, and you're just in the doorway, and you're carrying Nora, and I just think, oh my goodness, like, there he is, he's just being the dad, like, you know, he's done working for the day, and his most important priority is his kids. I love that about you. You're definitely a family man. But if there's one thing you want your kids to learn from you or know that you stand for, what is that one thing?
Man, it's interesting. Before I answer, it's been on my mind a lot. Ever since I started working with Chris from CrispiesCancer.com, I always think, like, if I was to get cancer, like, what would be the very first thing I would do? Every time I think about it, I know the first thing I would do is I'd grab my kids, I'd grab a video camera, and I would try to record, like, what I would tell them right now so I could, like, so that when I die, they could watch it later and be like, oh, this is my dad told me. This is the advice my dad gave me. And I had someone actually 2 days ago in an event I was at that talked about that. And I was like, you know what? Why should I wait till I have cancer? That's on my list this week of things to do is to go with each kid and sit down and actually record like my advice to them. And I want to try to do like once a year and just have it archived so that someday they can have it. It'd be super cool to have.
That's such a great idea. Well, let's start tonight.
So yeah, tonight's the night, kids. Listen in. So, and it's tough because as I think about that, like there's different aspects, right? There's like the spiritual, like what would I give them spiritually? What would I give them socially? What would I give them financially? What would be the advice? But I think the thing that's helped me have the most success in all aspects of life is I've been a really big, and then this is something I learned initially from Tony Robbins, which is probably one of the reasons why I like him so much, but is finding people that are the epitome of what you want to become and then modeling them as close as you can. So that it fits in everything, right? So if you're spiritually, like, who are the people spiritually look at? They're like, man, I want to be like that person. And then like model them as close as you can, figure out like what they do, how they do it. Like, I'm so obsessed. It's like, I interview people all the time. I'm like, what's your morning routine? What do you do the first thing in the morning? What's the second thing you do in the morning? Like, what do you, cause I want to know like what they're doing to get them to get that outcome, right? Like, everything is like, people don't just wake up one day amazing. Like, there's a bunch of things they do that get them to be that way. And so I think that'd be a big part. And even so much so that, like, if it was like from a financial or business section, I'll be like, find that person you want to be like and go like move in with them, work for them for free, whatever you need to do to figure that person out. Because yeah, everything I've been successful in life came from that. It's like finding someone who's amazing and then just following them and like believing them and 100%, like just putting all my eggs in that basket and whatever it can. I think that'd be the biggest thing. Good role models and then modeling them, like obsessively modeling, not just like, oh, this person's awesome, I like that person. Like, no, like obsessively, like get into their mindset. Like, if they've written books, like read all the books, like listen to their podcasts, like get inside their mind. Like, why do they think that way? Because if you figure out why they think that way, it's going to help you to figure out like how you should be thinking, right? Yeah, so obsessively modeling role models.
What if they let you down? That's true. You still got to keep your anchor in the one perfect.
Maybe that's the role model then.
There you go. So one of my favorite things about you and your family is how down to earth and normal you are. What is it that keeps you so humble and grounded when people literally pay thousands of dollars to hear what you have to say?
I think I'm going to give Colette so much credit for this. A huge part of it is my wife. My wife doesn't care about any of this stuff, which is tough for me because it's like, as a man, like 99% of the reason why I do this is trying to impress her. And she's just like, I'm good. Like, you just come home. Like, I just want you to come home, you know? And I think that's a big part of it. I think the second part we kind of touched upon earlier is just because I've cycled twice and because I've built it and lost it all at a really deep, painful level, like I am completely, like I am hyper, hyper, hyper aware of the fact that this is not me. Like, there are so many people and experiences and things that have made this possible. And if I'm not really careful, that can be taken away instantly. Anyway, I have such belief in my role in this world and in this life that it's like everything that I've been given. It was not something that it's not mine. And so I'm very aware of that and scared of that. And then just the fact that, you know, my wife, she's amazing. And like, just knowing that, like, I don't know, I think that if I'm not careful, I think I could lose her and my family. And for me, it's like, there's a quote David O. McKay said, there's no success can compensate for failure in the home. And I think about it all the time, like, God, like, I gotta get home. Cause like, if I fail there, then I fail everything. Like, that's my big mindset. I always think like, if my wife was to leave me, like, it means I failed this life. Like, I know that's not true. I'm never saying that because there's so many people I love that have gone through divorces and things like that. And that's not what I'm saying. But I just know for me personally, in my mindset, like if that was to happen, like that would be ultimate failure for me. So because that's like, I got to be very careful because I know I have so many people that I love, that I respect, that especially in business, we get so obsessed with it that they lose everything. And like, and I think I definitely have tendencies to do that if I'm not really, really careful. So I just try to be, because I get obsessed with things, and I could go to the office and spend like 6 months there and forget about the world. And if it wasn't for like my beautiful wife and these amazing kids that were like, I gotta go home. Like, if it wasn't for that, like, I could be in trouble. So I don't know. It's the family, and then just knowing, being hyper aware, it's not me.
I love that. And I love that you credit Colette, because she could care less what you drive or what you wear or how much you can bench. She doesn't care.
She doesn't care any of that. I can't figure it out.
She loves the goofy wrestler that she fell in love with. All right. What are you most grateful for, and how are you giving back? I know you are. Mm. I know the answer to this question, but I want you to tell my listeners. I know that you, every weekend, you teach the little neighborhood kids how to wrestle, and you do that totally free because you love it. I love that you do that.
Yeah, so many cool things. I don't know, I think, I just look at like the different gifts I've been given. Like, this part of my life, I'm like hyper aware of like, okay, why was I given that? There's not, like, wrestling is one, right? Like, I didn't learn wrestling just like, as much fun as I had, as much as I loved it, like, why was I given that gift? Okay, there's a reason. It wasn't just to like be fun for me. Like, initially probably was, but like long term, it's like you're given gifts. It's like the whole progression of life's interesting if you look at it, right? Like, there's a time in life where we go through this growth phase, right? Where like, and as babies, that's where we are. Babies come out and it's all about growth, right? And they're trying to figure things out. And then eventually you stop growing until you shift to contribution. So it's like same thing in a marriage, right? First it's just you, and then you meet your spouse, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, there's another person, you care about them, and all of a sudden it's like your whole world becomes us as opposed to me, and you become less selfish, and it's like, now we're together. And then also you have these amazing kids, and it shifts again from like, wait, it's us to like, it's them, and like they're the most important thing, right? So for me, my life, it's like there's this huge parallel of like being single, to being married, to being kids, that's happening in everything, right? So like, I was wrestling, it was growth, I was trying to become a better wrestler for me, but it's like, okay, now I have this gift I was given, like, what's the point of it? It's like, oh, I'm just to contribute. So where can I contribute? Like, well, I can help my kids. I can help neighborhood kids. Like, if I can bring rest into them, like, it gave me so many gifts. Like, let me, any kid who's interested, like, let me just help serve there. The same thing is some of the other organizations we work with. There's a charity called World Teacher Aid that builds schools in Kenya that we work with. There's also Operation Underground Railroad that saves kids from sex slavery. Like, I don't have the ability to go and save kids from sex slavery. Like, I'm scared of that. Like, the whole mission of these guys that go to Haiti and go to these countries around the world, and they go and they rescue kids and say, like, I don't have the ability to do that, right? But if I can help over here, like, the gifts I have been given, if I can get the message out to more people, and if I can make more awareness, if I can raise money for them, like, that's so exciting, because it's like, I can help impact that thing without having to do the thing that's super scary, right? And so it's like, for me, it's like using these gifts I've been given, like, I'm trying to get more and more folks, like, why did God give me that gift? Because it's not just so I could, I don't think he gives any gifts for us. It's like, how do we now use it for other people? So for me, it's just kind of figuring that out, like, what, like, why was I given this? And then now I've got it. Okay, what does he want me to do with this? Because, yes. You know, what's the purpose of it?
Yeah, I love that. I think he gave you the gift of determination. I'm learning that. The more I get to know you, I'm like, you are one determined human being. So of all of your accomplishments, what are you the most proud of?
Oh, man. I'm not sure exactly the best way to answer this one. I think, like, I feel like my, like, I'm supposed to be helping people to, the word keeps in my head is, like, freedom. Like, how do I free people so they can actually do what they need to do? You know what I mean? Like, And I feel like that's probably the most important thing. Like, if I can give people tools or ideas or thoughts or permission to, like, free themselves, people are amazing.
I wonder if I can help you a little bit with this. Like, I feel like, I remember once we were talking and you were like, money is not a bad thing. Like, it's not a bad thing to make money. Change your mindset a little bit. And I thought, as I think about that more, I think making money is amazing because it gives you so much freedom. So the more money that you have, like, I want my kids to be hard workers and I want them to learn how to make a lot of money, because for us, I know for my husband and I, it's given him a lot of freedom to be able to coach the neighborhood kids in soccer, and it's given him the freedom to be at home with his family and make memories with us, and it's given us the chance to give back a lot. And so I think whatever your focus is with money is what you'll do. So if you value boats and homes and all those things, none of those things, I'm not saying any of them are bad, but if that's what your focus is, that's what you're going to spend your money on. But if you believe in making a difference and, you know, changing the world somehow, giving your money and your time to worthy causes, then that, being able to do that, frees you up so much to do that. And I see you doing that for people. You're taking people who are kind of, you know, working paycheck to paycheck and just kind of slaves to, you know, their circumstances, to being able to, like, be the captain of their own ship. Like, they're making their money, they're making their difference, and I think that's so cool.
That's cool. You think about even, like, you remember, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs? I remember this in school. I don't remember all the details, but I remember, like, the bottom is, like, you have to have food and water or else can't focus on anything else. And when food and water's covered, then you're like, okay, now we need shelter. When shelter's covered, now you need, that's the thing, right? When all you're starving to death, you can't, all you can think about is that. And it's like, I feel like maybe somewhere in the hierarchy of needs, there's something where we need financial security, right? It's like, if we can give people that, then they don't have to be stressed about where's my food coming from, my paycheck, like, how am I doing that? If that stress goes away, then yes, then they can, like, look outwardly and be like, how can I bless other people's lives? And that's really, really cool. Yeah. So yes, you said that perfectly. Way better than I did. I love it.
All right, last question. What is your number one key to success? How did you become Russell Brunson?
Man, I think it probably comes down to determination you talked about earlier. Like, and belief. I think belief's the biggest thing. I think I was blessed, like, I was thinking about wrestling. Why was I successful in wrestling? I think I remember going to the state tournament and seeing a guy win the state title, and I was like, I believe that I can do that. And so I went out there and I just killed myself until I did it. With business, like, I was not a business major. I didn't know business anything. But I got online and I was trying to figure out how to make money. And I saw these people and, like, I saw what they were doing. And I had so much belief that, like they're doing it, so I can do it. And so I just did it. And, like, had to, like, as soon as I believed it was awesome. I still remember, like, when my whole company bankrupted and everything's falling apart. And one of my best friends this day came to me, Brent Co-Peters. And he's like, hey, so everything looks really scary. We just laid off 80 people. Like, are we going to be okay? Like, is this? I was like, oh, yeah, like, it's going to be fine. Like, I don't know when. But, like, I had such, like, I knew it would be. I just had perfect belief and hope that, like, it'd be fine. He's like, okay. He's like, if you believe it, then I'm in. And he started working for, like, you know, half the paycheck and, like, super, you know, despite, like, people in his family wanting him to go do other things. And he's like, no, Russell has perfect belief in it and I believe it. And so I think my biggest thing is, like, and I see something, I believe. And then I work my butt off to get that thing because I have such a perfect belief that it's going to be there. I think a lot of times we don't believe, and that's what keeps us from trying. Like, what's going to work? Is it not going to? I don't know. It's like, no. Again, it comes back to modeling. Find somebody who did it. That person did it. They're not much smarter than me. I believe I can do it. I'm in. Let's go. And then start running as fast as I can.
I love it. So fun. Where can my listeners find you? Like, if they want to know the secrets to funnel hacking and all of that, how can they find you?
The easiest place is just russellbrunson.com. If you go there, there's links to the different books I've written, the software, our events, everything's kind of, you can find from there. And as you know, there's a video of, on the page of me crying like a little baby.
You made me cry. I didn't know that story and I was bawling. I had to pull it all together.
Yeah, that's the best spot for sure.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being here. Like, I can't describe to you how thankful I am.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I'm so proud of you for actually doing the podcast. And I'm glad you're running with it.
And I'm doing everything you say. What was that hashtag? Do everything Russell says.
Do what Russell says.
Yep. I'm doing what Russell says. So for sure. That's a good hashtag.
That's awesome.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much.